Hey, you guys. Tomes of Terror time once again. This is my book review series. So this particular book, this is how this shit usually goes. I mean, unless somebody recommends something, I usually pick a lot of stuff at random. And that was absolutely the case with this one. I had really only heard of this author, Sarah Gran, like kind of peripherally, I guess. She was mentioned in a couple of other book review channels I watch, I think. So when I came across her novella, Come Closer, I actually wasn't aware of, there were two things that I weren't aware of. One, that it was actually as old as it was. It's not old, but you know, it's about 20 years old. And two, how recently, I guess it had something of like a resurgence in popularity, I guess following the success of Gran's later series of books, which have a character named Claire DeWitt. I think she started writing those in 2011, if I'm not mistaken. And I think like the last one maybe came out in 2018, and those are like really popular. So I guess some people are like rediscovering some of her older novels. So pretty much I was just kind of like, you know, with a lot of my book review picks, I just saw Come Closer pop up in my Kindle Unlimited recommendations. I thought I remembered the author's name from somewhere. The cover looked cool. I didn't read the synopsis or anything like that, but I just like was like checked it out and started reading it. So this novella, as I mentioned, came out back in 2003. Now, as I was reading it, I didn't know that like prior to reading it, as I mentioned. So it didn't actually really occur to me, other than there being one reference in there, like to a character, you know, maybe you should get one of those newfangled cell phone types. That's not what they said, but it was like that kind of thing. And other than that, I really can't think of anything that would have dated it all that much, which like I said, is actually really good because, you know, the book is almost 20 years old and that absolutely would not have probably occurred to me. It just seems like it hasn't dated at all. So the book is also very short and sweet, clocks in at just under 200 pages. I think it's about 194, something like that. And I was able to finish it off very easily in one afternoon. And this was one of those books too, where, cause you know how sometimes you start reading a book and it takes you a little while to like warm up to it, like a few pages. This one I was just kind of like drawn in right away. I'm not sure entirely what it was. I think it was probably like her writing style, which kind of comes into, it's very straightforward, it's very acerbic, like it's kind of like has a blackly comic kind of tone to it, and it's almost kind of like conversational. So I tend to usually like that kind of style, or it, at least it gets me invested quicker. So I will say that, yeah, this drew me like right in, and I was just like kept on reading it, and it just like, I basically just read it in a couple of hours, like in one sitting. And I will say too that this book really packs kind of like a hell of a wallop for being, you know, for the scant page count that it has. And as it goes on, it sort of becomes something akin to maybe like watching a horrifying plane crash that you know is inevitable, but you're kind of like powerless to stop it. You know what I mean? So it's that kind of like story. So Come Closer is told from the first person perspective of a 34-year-old woman named Amanda. Now, she lives in this kind of unnamed but large metropolitan city somewhere, presumably in the U.S. It doesn't really matter. She works as a successful architect at sort of a smaller firm, but she's kind of well on track to setting up her own firm in the near future. So, like I said, very successful. She also has a dependable, very loving husband whose name is Ed or Edward. He works as a financial consultant or something like that. And she lives in this beautiful loft apartment in a kind of desolate, you know, not as populated area, but it's kind of like a peaceful corner of the city. So to that end, the couple seem kind of like your typical upper middle class urbanites. They don't have any kids bogging them down. You know, they go to fancy work dinners. They have friends that have a beach house. You know, they have expensive shoes and purses and shit like that. You know what I mean? Well, I don't know because I've never lived like that, but you know, you've probably seen it in the movies. So it's the kind of life one would think that many people would absolutely kill for and that, you know, people should be happy with. However, at the very beginning of the story, something seems ever so slightly off. The first occurrence, which happens like pretty much on the very first page, has to do with this proposal at work that Amanda has written and submitted to her boss. I mean, she spent all weekend working on it. She thinks it's impeccable, and she's sure it's going to be approved, and this is going to be like some big project that she's going to, you know, get a promotion or whatever. But then she gets called into the boss's office, and basically he just like reams her a new one because the proposal she thought she printed and turned in has been seemingly replaced with this sort of slur-filled rant, calling the boss all kinds of names and implying some very colorful things about his sexual proclivities. So Amanda is actually shocked by this happenstance, and she insists somebody has to be playing a prank on me. Like, somebody printed this out of my computer, like somebody's playing a joke. So then she goes back to her computer and prints out a copy of the actual proposal, which she thought she turned in, and then she turns that in. So the boss is actually mollified. She's worked there a long time, and they know that it's not usually the kind of thing that she would do. So she's like, okay, well, you know, the boss is like, yeah, you're right. Somebody just must be playing a joke on you. That's really, really weird. Now, even though Amanda is convinced that that must have been what happened, that somebody somehow came in and, like, printed out the wrong thing, privately, she's a little bit weirded out because all of the terrible things that were said in the proposal, she's like, I have actually thought those things about my boss. So it's really weird that somebody actually, like, wrote them down. And then there's the other, like, small matter of these very strange tapping sounds that her and her husband, Ed, have been hearing back at their loft where they live. Now, the sounds always come in pairs. It's kind of like tap, 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 tap. And she said it sounds something like a dog's nails, like clicking on a wooden floor or something like that. And they sometimes go on for hours. But significantly, they only occur when Amanda is in the apartment, but never when Ed is there alone. And like one time when she goes off on a business trip, he says, yeah, it didn't do it the whole entire time you were gone. Now, whenever her or Ed go looking for the source of the noise, they can never quite pinpoint it. If it sounds like it's coming from the living room, for example, and then they go check in the living room, then it'll sound like it's coming from the kitchen, you know, and so forth. There's also this stray dog that Amanda befriends near the beginning of the story, kind of on her daily walk home, like from the train station. Like, she's coming home from work and she's walking home from the train station. And this is like a stray dog, and she sees the dog every day. So the dog is a German Shepherd, and initially he's very affectionate toward her. And so she kind of like gets used to him walking home with her. So she starts bringing treats and stuff like that. She thinks about adopting him, but I guess Ed is allergic to animals, so she can't. But as time goes on, the dog seems like it no longer recognizes her and starts like growling when she approaches. By the way, nothing bad happens to the dog, so don't worry. You know, I'm an animal lover too, and every time a dog or a cat like appears in a horror story, my stomach always clenches. I'm like, oh no, this poor little baby, something bad's gonna happen. But nothing bad happens to the dog, okay? So I'm just telling you right this, I understand. I just thought I had to tell you that. And there are also a bunch of other little things, like she takes up smoking again in spite of her husband's protest. So my God, you quit such a long time ago and it's bad for your health, blah, blah, blah. She starts shoplifting and not really realizing that she did so. You know, she has kind of little brief like blackouts where she's like, oh, you know, like one time she's at work and she goes out to lunch and then she has like an hour that she can't account for, which she doesn't know what she was doing. She gets more easily irritated with her husband, like picking petty fights with him, and also starts snapping at strangers for just like minor slights. She gets the feeling overall that her personality is changing, like in small and subtle ways. And when she happens upon friends that haven't seen her in a long time, they always tell her she looks different. Like maybe you've gained a little weight, but you look good. Like you look healthy, you look happy, but they can't ever put their finger quite on what it is that's different about her. Like, maybe your skin looks nicer, maybe you're pregnant, maybe, you know what I mean? It's always kind of like, or did you get your hair done, or did you get some work done, or something like that. They always say, like, she looks better, but they can't, like, put their finger on what it is that's different. And then there are also these weird dreams that she's been having. So she's been having these really odd, like, recurring dreams about, it's like a beach or, like, an island, like, a beach with crimson sand, and there's also, like, crimson water. And then there's this kind of beautiful but sort of sinister looking dark-haired woman who lies next to her on the sand and tells her how much she loves her and I'm never gonna leave you and all this other kind of stuff. So this woman actually bears an uncanny resemblance to how Amanda pictured her childhood imaginary friend, whose name was Pansy. And on one occasion, Amanda even swears that she sees Pansy in the street, and she goes up to the woman where the woman, like, calls her by name. But then, like, when she turns back, like, she's not there anymore. So, of course, Ed doesn't believe her when she tells him later, but she's, like, absolutely sure that she saw her. Now, one day by chance, or so it seems, Amanda receives the wrong book in the mail. She had ordered this architecture book from a small press, but they accidentally sent one about demon possession. For a lark, you know, just thinking, why the hell not? Amanda takes the demon possession quiz, which is featured in the first part of the book, and is amused but also mildly disturbed by the fact that she scores like a 3 or 4 out of 10 on the quiz. Now, the possession quiz actually becomes sort of like a recurring plot point throughout the story. Like, Amanda takes it a few more times, like, as the story goes on and, like, as things start to escalate, and she scores higher and higher each time she takes it. So, essentially, Come Closer is a demon possession story, but told from the first-person perspective of the possessee, which is not something I think that I've ever actually read before. If there's another one like that, like, let me know. But I can't remember ever reading anything, like, from exactly that perspective. It's very grounded in reality. Like, it's maybe supernatural, but it doesn't really have anything. It comes at it from a very grounded point of view. And it has sort of like a, kind of like a black humor to it. I feel like this is pretty much exactly what it would be like if demons were real and one was slowly taking over your body, but you weren't quite aware that that's exactly what was happening to you. You know what I mean? So that's kind of like the tone we're going for. Now, in fact, the story does leave the possibility open that Amanda is just descending into madness and maybe just perceiving it as possession. But because you, the reader, are seeing everything from Amanda's POV, there's really no way of knowing that for sure. I mean, this could absolutely be read either absolutely literally or metaphorically, you know, and it works just the same either way. Now, I think the thing that I liked the most about this book, well, I mean, other than just about everything, because I really, really liked this a lot, was how cleverly insidious it was. Like, you as the reader are in many ways in the same position as the protagonist, Amanda. Like, at the beginning of the story, she seems content enough, but pretty much everybody can relate to maybe sometimes feeling dissatisfied with your life, like maybe we want something different than what we have, or things didn't turn out quite the way we wanted them to, like we don't have as much control over what happens, something like that. I feel like most people have probably had fantasies about blowing up their stable but boring lives and going off and doing something crazy, like changing their entire life up. It's a very natural human inclination, and I feel like this story, like, very effectively, like, uses it against you. I mean, so when Amanda, like, takes up smoking again, it doesn't seem as though she's possessed necessarily. It's more like she's reclaiming some of her own personality that perhaps she suppressed for the sake of her husband when she married, you know, health concerns be damned. When she, for example, like, claps back at someone in the street for being an asshole, we see it not so much as like a demon worming its way into her psyche, maybe, but maybe more like, oh, Amanda is learning to be more assertive. Like, she's learning to, like, not let people push her around, stuff like that, which is a good thing. So in this way, I kind of feel like the reader starts to identify with Amanda somewhat, like to a greater or lesser degree. Nothing that happens at first is all that bad. And the thing about it, and like I said, you can relate to a way it's like, you know, who wouldn't want to, like, tell their boss what they really think of them to their face? Who wouldn't, you know, kind of want to let their hair down sometimes and, oh, I'll just have that extra shot of whiskey. I'll buy that super expensive outfit that I can't really afford, but it's so cool and I really want it. I mean, who wouldn't like to do that kind of stuff? It's all perfectly understandable. But the hell of this story is that it's these very incremental desires, mostly harmless in their early stages, obviously, that kind of slowly ramp up and up until Amanda has been entirely consumed by this demon. And whether it's real or not, it does absolutely cause her to just completely burn down her entire life to a point where she is resorting to violence and even kind of like murder, like toward the end. So like I said, whether the demon is real or not, like, doesn't really matter, and you can totally read it either way. So as I mentioned, I really, really liked this. I liked this book a lot. This was just outstanding. It's very, very fast-paced. It's very compelling, very page-turning. It's darkly funny, which I really liked, like, the humor in it. And it's also, like, kind of terrifying. Like, the implications of it are kind of terrifying. It doesn't have any twists and turns, really. It's basically just a very simple tale of a woman who is either possessed by a demon or succumbing to insanity and ultimately ends up destroying herself and those around her. So there aren't any surprises, really, as far as the plot goes. But it's still, like, a really wild and very grimly entertaining ride, even though, you know, like I said, it's almost kind of like watching, like, a slow-motion car crash. Like, you know that it's going to happen, but it's just kind of like you can't do anything to stop it, and you're just, like, sitting there, like, powerless, and you're just, like, watching it, like, in horrified fascination. It's kind of like that. So I absolutely wouldn't hesitate to recommend this to anyone who's into psychological horror, possession horror. It does have something of a literary fiction bent, if you want to call it that, but not so much in the writing style. Like I said, it's very matter of fact. It's very conversational because it's in the first person. So you're pretty much inside Amanda's head pretty much the entire time. So it's not real highfalutin or anything like that. It's just very visceral. It's very straightforward. And I think that really, really works a lot to its advantage and makes it that much more entertaining and more horrifying because you're seeing everything from her perspective and you're not entirely sure. Like, you can see how her life is spiraling out of control and you can't really do anything to stop her, to help it. And I think that, to help her, and I think that's, like, really, really scary, and it's really, really entertaining at the same time. So that will do it for this Tomes of Terror. As I mentioned, this book is available on Kindle Unlimited. So if you have Kindle Unlimited, you can read it for free. It's very short, less than 200 pages. So you should probably, like, be able to finish it off in an afternoon, because it's a really, really fun read as well. So, yeah, that'll do it for this one. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.